Chapter 88. It is perfectly horrible and perfectly beautiful. Within the due limits of modesty, that is what I think. I hope it will take me a year or two to write it, and that it will turn out to be the right vessel to contain all the abuse I am planning to dump into it. Yours ever, Mark. The story mentioned in the foregoing, in which Mark Twain was to give his opinion of man, was The Mysterious Stranger. It was not finished at the time, and its closing chapter was not found until after his death. 6 years later, 1916, it was published serially in Harper's Magazine, and in book form. The end of May found the Clemens party in London, where they were received and entertained with all the hospitality they had known in earlier years. Clemens was too busy for letter writing, but in the midst of things he took time to report to Howells an amusing incident of one of their entertainments. To W.D. Howells, in America. London, July 3rd, 99. Dear Howells, I've a lot of things to write you, but it's no use. I can't get time for anything these days. I must break off and write a postscript to Canon Wilberforce before I go to bed. This afternoon he left a luncheon party half an hour ahead of the rest, and carried off my hat, which has Mark Twain in a big hand written in it. When the rest of us came out, there was but one hat that would go on my head, it fitted exactly too. So wore it away. It had no name in it, but the canon was the only man who was absent. I wrote him a note at 8 p.m., saying that for 4 hours I had not been able to take anything that did not belong to me, nor stretch a fact beyond the frontiers of truth, and my family were getting alarmed. Could he explain my trouble? And now at 8:30 p.m. comes a note from him to say that all the afternoon he has been exhibiting a wonder-compelling mental vivacity and grace of expression, etc., etc., and have I missed a hat? Our letters have crossed. Yours ever, Mark. News came of the death of Robert Ingersoll. Clemens had been always one of his most ardent admirers, and a warm personal friend. To Ingersoll's niece he sent a word of heartfelt sympathy. To Miss Eva Farrell, in New York. 30 Wellington Court, Albert Gate. Dear Miss Farrell, except my daughters, I have not grieved for any death as I have grieved for his. His was a great and beautiful spirit, he was a man, all man from his crown to his foot soles. My reverence for him was deep and genuine, I prized his affection for me, and returned it with usury. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. Clemens and family decided to spend the summer in Sweden, at Sauna, in order to avail themselves of osteopathic treatment as practiced by Heinrich Kellgren. Kellgren's method, known as the Swedish movements, seemed to Mark Twain a wonderful cure for all ailments, and he heralded the discovery far and wide. He wrote to friends far and near advising them to try Kellgren for anything they might happen to have. Whatever its beginning, any letter was likely to close with some mention of the new panacea. To Rev. J. H. Twitchell, traveling in Europe. Sanna, September 6, 99. Dear Joe, I've no business in here, I ought to be outside. I shall never see another sunset, to begin with at this side of heaven. Venice? Land, what a poor interest that is. This is the place to be. I have seen about 60 sunsets here, and a good 40 of them were clear, and away beyond anything I had ever imagined before for dainty, and exquisite and marvelous beauty and infinite change and variety. America? Italy? The tropics? They have no notion of what a sunset ought to be. And this one, this unspeakable wonder. It discounts all the rest. It brings the tears, it is so unutterably beautiful. If I had time, I would say a word about this curative system here. The people actually do several of the great things the Christian scientists pretend to do. You wish to advise with a physician about it? Certainly. There is no objection. He knows next to something about his own trade, but that will not embarrass him in framing a verdict about this one. I respect your superstitions, we all have them. It would be quite natural for the cautious Chinaman to ask his native priest to instruct him as to the value of the new religious specialty which the Western missionary is trying to put on the market before investing in it. He would get a verdict. Love to you all. Always yours, Mark. Howells wrote that he was going on a reading tour, dreading it, of course, and asking for any advice that Clemens felt qualified to give. Naturally, Clemens gave him the latest he had in stock, without realizing, perhaps, that he was recommending an individual practice which few would be likely to imitate. Nevertheless, what he says is interesting. To W.D. Howells, in America. Santa, Sweden, September 26, 99. Dear Howells, get your lecture by heart, it will pay you. I learned a trick in Vienna by accident which I wish I had learned years ago. I meant to read from a Tauchnitz, because I knew I hadn't well memorized the pieces, and I came on with the book, and read a few sentences, then remembered that the sketch needed a few words of explanatory introduction. And so, lowering the book and now, and then unconsciously using it to gesture with, I talked the introduction, and it happened to carry me into the sketch itself, and then I went on, pretending that I was merely talking extraneous matter, and would come to the sketch presently. It was a beautiful success. I knew the substance of the sketch, and the telling phrases of it. And so, the throwing of the rest of it into informal talk as I went along limbered it up, and gave it the snap, and go and freshness of an impromptu. I was to read several pieces, and I played the same game with all of them, and always the audience thought I was being reminded of outside things and throwing them in, and was going to hold up the book, and begin on the sketch presently and... So I always got through the sketch, before they were entirely sure that it had begun. I did the same thing in Budapest, and had the same good time over again. It's a new dodge, and the best one that was ever invented. Try it. You will never lose your audience, not even for a moment. Their attention is fixed, and never wavers. And that is not the case where one reads from Booker MS. Or where he stands up without a note and frankly exposes the fact, by his confident manner and smooth phrasing, that he is not improvising, but reciting from memory. And in the heat of telling a thing that is memorized in substance only, one flashes out the happiest suddenly begotten phrases every now and then. Try it. Such a phrase has a life and sparkle about it that twice as good a one could not exhibit if prepared beforehand, and it etches an audience in such an enthusing and inspiring and uplifting way, that that lucky phrase breeds another one, sure. Your September installment, Air Silver Wedding Journey, was delicious, every word of it. You haven't lost any of your splendid art. Callers have arrived. With love, Mark. S., wrote Howells, if I were a great histrionic artist like you, I would get my poor essays by heart, and recite them, but being what I am I should do the thing so lifelessly, that I had better recognize their deadness frankly and read them. From Vienna, Clemens had contributed to the Cosmopolitan, then owned by John Brisbane Walker, his first article on Christian Science. It was a delicious bit of humor and found such enthusiastic appreciation that Walker was moved to send an additional $200 check in payment for it. This brought prompt acknowledgement. To John Brisbane Walker, in Irvington, N.Y. : London, October 19, 99. Dear Mr. Walker, by gracious but you have a talent for making a man feel proud and good. To say a compliment well is a high art and few possess it. You know how to do it, and when you confirm its sincerity with a handsome check the limit is reached, and compliment can no higher go. I like to work for you. When you don't approve an article you say so, recognizing that I am not a child, and can stand it. And when you approve an article I don't, have to dicker with you, as if I raised peanuts and you kept a stand. I know I shall get every penny the article is worth. You have given me very great pleasure, and I thank you for it. Sincerely yours, S. 50. Clemens. On the same day he sent word to Owls of the good luck which now seemed to be coming his way. The Joan of Arc introduction was the same that today appears in his collected works under the title of Saint Joan of Arc. To W.D. Howells, in New York. London, October 19, 99. Dear Howells, my, it's a lucky day. Of the sort when it never rains but it pours. I was to write an introduction to a nobler book, the English translation of the official record, unabridged, of the trials and rehabilitation of Joan of Arc, and make a lot of footnotes. I wrote the introduction in Sweden, and here a few days ago I tore loose from a tale I am writing, and took the MS book, and went at the grind of note-making, a fearful job for a man not used to it. This morning brought a note from my excellent friend Murray, a rich Englishman who edits the translation, saying, "Never mind the notes, we'll make the translators do them." That was comfort and joy. The same mail brought a note from Canon Wilberforce, asking me to talk Joan of Arc in his drawing room to the Dukes and Earls and MPs, which would fetch me out of my seclusion and into print, and I couldn't have that. And so of course I must run down to the Abbey and explain and lose an hour. Just then came Murray and said, "Eve that to me, I'll go and do the explaining, and put the thing off 3 months. You write a note, and tell him I am coming." Which I did, later. Wilberforce carried off my hat from a lunch party last summer, and in today's note he said he wouldn't steal my new hat this time. In my note I said I couldn't make the drawing room talk, now Murray would explain, and added a P.S. You mustn't think it is because I am afraid to trust my hat in your reach again, for I assure you upon honor it isn't. I should bring my old one. I had suggested to Murray a fortnight ago that he get some big guns to write introductory monographs for the book. Miss X, Joan's Voices and Prophecies. The Lord Chief Justice of England, the legal prodigies which he performed before her judges. Lord Roberts, her military genius. Kipling, her patriotism. And so on. When he came this morning he said he had captured Miss X, that Lord Roberts and Kipling were going to take hold and see if they could do monographs worthy of the book. He hadn't run the others to cover yet, but was on their track. Very good news. It is a grand book, and is entitled to the best efforts of the best people. As for me, I took pains with my introduction, and I admit that it is no slouch of a performance. Then I came down to Shadows, and found your all too beautiful letter, and was lifted higher than ever. Next came letters from America properly glorifying my Christian Science article in the Cosmopolitan, and one roundly abusing it. And a letter from John Brisbane Walker enclosing $200 additional pay for the article. He had already paid enough, but I didn't mention that which wasn't right of me, for this is the second time he has done such a thing, whereas Gilder has done it only once, and no one else ever. I make no prices with Walker and Gilder, I can trust them. And last of all came a letter from M. Dash. How I do wish that man was in hell. Even the briefest line from that idiot puts me in a rage. But on the whole it has been a delightful day, and with M in hell it would have been perfect. But that will happen, and I can wait. Ah, if I could look into the inside of people as you do, and put it on paper, and invent things for them to do and say, and tell how they said it, I could write a fine and readable book now, for I've got a prime subject. I've written 30,000 words of it, and satisfied myself that the stuff is there, so I am going to discard that MS, and begin all over again, and have a good time with it. Oh, I know how you feel. I've been in hell myself. You are there tonight. By difference in time you are at luncheon, now and not eating it. Nothing is so lonesome as gadding around platforming. I have declined 45 lectures today, England and Scotland. I wanted the money, but not the torture. Good luck to you. And repentance. With love to all of you, Mark. Letters of 1900, mainly to Twitchell. The Boer War. Boxer Troubles. the return to America, the new year found Clemens still in London, chiefly interested in osteopathy and characteristically glorifying the practice at the expense of other healing methods. To Rev. J. H. Twitchell, in Hartford. London, January 8, 1900. Dear Joe, mental telepathy has scored another. Mental telegraphy will be greatly respected a century hence. By the accident of writing my sister and describing to her the remarkable cures made by Kellgren with his hands and without drugs, I brought upon myself a quite stunning surprise. For she wrote to me that as he had been taking this very treatment in Buffalo and that it was an American invention. Well, it does really turn out that Dr. Still, in the middle of Kansas, in a village, began to experiment in 1874, only 5 years after Kellgren began the same work obscurely in the village of Gotha, in Germany. Dr. Still seems to be an honest man, therefore I am persuaded that Kellgren moved him to his experiments by mental telegraphy across 6 hours of longitude, without need of a wire. By the time Still began to experiment, Kellgren had completed his development of the principles of his system, and established himself in a good practice in London 1874 and was in good shape to convey his discovery to Kansas, mental telegraphically. Yes, I was greatly surprised to find that my mare's nest was much in arrears. That this new science was well known in America under the name of osteopathy. Since then, I find that in the past 3 years it has got Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.